Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, remembering what happened at Waco 30 years ago and how it led to today's right-wing anti-government militia movement. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It was 30 years ago that the Branch Davidian compound near Waco went up in flames after a 51-day armed standoff by the FBI, ATF, and Texas state law enforcement. The fire started after the FBI launched tear gas canisters into the compound. The blaze resulted in the deaths of 76 Branch Davidians, including 25 children, two pregnant women, and David Koresh, the leader of the cult. Also in the siege, four federal agents were killed. The event, from start to finish, played out on TV sets across America and continues to inspire anti-government activists today. But investigative reporter and best-selling author Jeff Gwynn writes, it was poor decision-making and bad leadership that caused this tragic confrontation to happen. His new book is Waco, David Koresh, the Branch Davidians, and a Legacy of Rage. I ask Gwynn what led him to investigate the Branch Davidian siege.
It was one of the things I was thinking of writing about. And then on January the 6th, 2021, the assault on the Capitol. And almost immediately, you could see the link between the organizers of some of the groups that were part of that. And they had gotten involved in militia movements, they all said, because of Waco. When I became convinced that whatever happened at Mount Carmel was still having tremendous repercussions today, that cinched it for me. Then I wanted to write about it. I wanted to understand it better myself.
We talk about this event. Waco is the shorthand for what happened. Okay, just the title of your book. And you say Waco, and people know immediately what you're talking about. Waco, I mean, how does it that the name of that municipality, which actually has nothing to do with what happened, has become the shorthand?
The thing is, when people are trying to target an event, to try to keep it relevant, Mount Carmel, it can be mistaken for candy. Carmel can be pronounced Carmel. People aren't sure what it means. But because the event was in our faces so many days consecutively, and the news media would identify themselves as broadcasting from Waco, even though Mount Carmel is about 7.5 miles outside the city limits, the word came to mean the event, and vice versa. It's the public that always decides the name by which something will be remembered.
Part of the story is the media story. And that's really fascinating because I was working in the news media at the time, and I had that perspective, and I could tell there was a technology innovation. A lot of it was happening at the time in news broadcasting. And you lay that out in your story, and that helped magnify this as an event. First off, we had that incredible, startling video of the first attack. I don't know if that's right. The right word or not, the raid on Mount Carmel. And we saw the gunfire, and we saw the ATF agents taking fire, wounded, fleeing, being taken away wounded on the hoods of vehicles after a ceasefire was declared. That in itself was startling video. The likes we had never seen before domestically. It was lens candy.
That's a good way to put it. I wish I had used that in the book, frankly. Yeah. Again, this is an event that we couldn't avoid seeing or hearing about, talking about at work or at home. If you listen to the radio on your way to work or way home from work, there was usually something going on right away. And not only was it on almost every form of media, a media that was much more widespread than previously, But that meant that the reporters, the journalists, the cameramen, the commentators needed to keep trying to find something to talk about in a situation that seemed like it was going to just stretch out there forever, with the Branch Davidians holed up inside Mount Carmel and the FBI circling the building, which was known as the compound because that was the word the media decided to use. So you had all this speculation on the air. You had all different people trying to talk over each other to say what it meant. And every TV station, every radio broadcast, they're competing with each other not only to bring the public the news, but to bring it to them in such an intriguing, engaging way that you'll listen to our channel. You'll tune into our show if you want to keep up with this. And so, you know, became top this. How crazy are those people in there? Or what evil thing might the FBI be thinking of doing for these innocent Christian gun owners who are being threatened? All that speculation ran rampant, and it didn't stop when the fire broke out on April 19th.
This was also, we had CNN, which had been around for about 10 years already, but still was developing its legs. And we had technology of mobile satellite communications. Every TV station had a satellite truck, and everyone in Texas and beyond sent it to this Waco event. And they were doing live hits at 5, 6, and 10 every night for 51 days.
Talking to some of the reporters from newspapers who were there every day, they said that within the first week, they'd run all the stories they could about how most people in Waco, who'd been living there a long time, knew some of the Branch Davidians, had encountered them in different places. For instance, Koresh's legal wife was a checker in a local supermarket and hadn't ever found them particularly frightening. Then they would go to the FBI daily press conferences and essentially be told the same thing, that there's a crazy cult leader in there, that here Charlie Manson mentioned quite a bit, Jim Jones, trying to link Koresh and his followers, described as a cult, with two other groups described as cults, and none of the three really had anything in common with each other.
So there were other people who were attracted to this event at Mount Carmel, people who had sympathies towards the Branch Davidians. They were skeptical, to say the least, of a government story that inside they were altering guns illegally and that they were selling guns, that there was child abuse, sexual child abuse going on inside. And instead they saw it was a government out of control. And one of the people who arrived and was selling anti-government stickers was a man named Timothy McVeigh. Can you tell us about that?
Probably the second or third day that the FBI had encircled Mount Carmel, that's when a lot of outsiders started showing up, and they were held back by roadblocks about a mile or so away from Mount Carmel. They could sort of see the outline of the building. Some of them were just curious and they wanted to be anywhere something spectacular was taking place, but quite a few were already very anti-government, McVeigh being one of them. Something that often gets forgotten in today's still remaining obsession with Mount Carmel is 7 months prior to that, there had been a standoff at Ruby Ridge in Idaho, in which a militant and his family were holding out against an ATF FBI siege, and a teenage boy was killed, a U.S. Marshal, and the wife of the man who supposedly had committed the crimes and was supposed to surrender. That had already enlisted the sympathy from a lot of people like Timothy McVeigh. McVeigh is a former soldier, had served overseas, but he had come back convinced that the United States government was actually the real oppressor. And he watched from the hood of his car outside Mount Carmel. He was so incensed by what happened that 2 years to the date after the burning of Mount Carmel on April 19th, McVeigh blew up a federal building in Oklahoma City in direct retaliation, and he said so after he was captured. His attitude was really adopted not just by him, but by people who have tried to spread it ever since, from Alex Jones of InfoWars to the leaders of Promise Keepers and Oath Keepers, Proud Boys, whatever, the different groups like that. They all were in some way either at Mount Carmel or outside it, or mesmerized by it and saw it as a great tool to push their theories forward afterward.
So you lay out that what happened at Waco is not an isolated event, but a part of a sequence of events. I'd like to add in there also the Republic of Texas standoff at at Fort Davis. The Texas Rangers refused to call in the FBI or the ATF during that event because they saw how they acted at Waco, and they knew they said they would just mess everything up. It would be a disaster. And said they wanted to handle it on their own. What did they mean by that? Why did the Texas Rangers think that the FBI and the ATF couldn't be trusted to handle something like the Republic of Texas standoff at Fort Davis?
Well, it can't be said and should not be said that originally in Waco there was any kind of conspiracy by federal agencies to just destroy people they considered suspect. It's a fact that leaders of ATF and the FBI made horrible decisions. And because of those decisions, not only did we have four agents die, 16 more wounded, but we had over 80 of the Branch Davidians die, and none of it had to happen. The fact that these were terrible individual mistakes made by leaders of the two agencies kind of got lost in the overall horror of it. After Mount Carmel, the Texas Rangers were requested to go in and investigate what had happened. And the Rangers were pretty open about it. What they found was that, yes, the Branch Davidians were guilty of many things: illegal altering of guns, illegal possession of firearms. Koresh was a child rapist. He was a polygamist. Children were being beaten terribly, though the Branch Davidians thought it was only by biblical justification. And yet, when you look at what happened, while it's horrible that afterward Waco has been used by the militia movement to try to bring more violence and paranoia to America, it didn't have to happen that way. The Rangers knew it, and at Fort Davis, they felt that their group, their organization, their agency was simply better qualified to bring things to a peaceful conclusion. They didn't want to risk another Waco, Mount Carmel, because they had seen up close and in terrifying detail just how easily something like that can happen.
You lay out in your book, Waco, David Koresh, The Branch Davidians, and a Legacy of Rage, that it's kind of like a Rorschach test. What you look at it, you're going to see something different. You examine the evidence, you've gone through the records, talked to participants, and you see gross incompetence. Others see a nefarious, sinister government that wants to trample on religious liberty and gun rights. The issue of incompetence, that does seem to have more the razor that cuts through. It's the simple explanation that seems to work.
Well, it's the correct explanation. It doesn't seem to work. It is the explanation. Quite simply, ATF leaders had promised that if they lost the element of surprise before the raid, they would call it off. They lost the element of surprise. They did not call it off. They thought they could still get in there, take the Branch Davidians by surprise, and everything would work out. That was gross incompetence, and it was absolutely dereliction of duty and the breaking of a promise that had been made to the leaders of the Department of the Treasury to whom they reported. That's number one, okay? Number two, neither ATF nor the FBI bothered trying to learn the religious beliefs of the Branch Davidians. They had no idea the Branch Davidians were led by a man who was prophesizing Babylon would attack them. They would fight Babylon, be killed by Babylon. be translated back to life by God, as the book of Revelation promises, and bring about the new thousand-year kingdom of God after the end of days. So they were bringing an attack to people who wanted to be attacked, who thought a firefight to the death with Babylon was exactly what God had ordained them to do. What Koresh believed and what he was preaching was not a deep, dark secret. A lot of people knew that the Branch Davidians were dedicated to the end of days and believed literally in the book of Revelation, and that Koresh was the Lamb. But ATF and FBI didn't think that mattered. So what? It was Bible babble. Again, that's incompetence, that's unforgivable, but it's not part of any sinister plot or evidence that they set out to eradicate this group. The FBI promised Attorney General Reno, who had only been in office for a couple days when the final assault began. There was no attorney general sworn in yet for most of this. They promised that they would insert CS gas over a period of 2 days, that inserted gradually so there never would be enough of an amount to actually physically harm anyone besides irritating eyes and skin enough for the Branch Davidians to come out. Instead, they used up their 2-day supply in 4 hours, not following the plan that they had approved. Afterward, Reno was furious and said that she'd been lied to, but by then, the anti-government forces could already say she'd signed off on the operation. Well, the result and the way it was carried out was not what she signed off on. So again, all terrible mistakes. The people who made them did not in any way profit by them. They properly had their careers derailed, as they should have been. It was awful. But again, there is no plot.
The Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Agency, the ATF, they still suffer a black eye to this day from this. We still hear from Republican lawmakers who want them to be defunded and to be disbanded. And because they deal with firearms, they want to regulate and try and enforce gun laws. So is the legacy of the Branch Davidians in Waco, is that interfere with how well the ATF can operate?
One of the things that is forgotten is that ATF was a punching bag for the Republican Party and the NRA long before Mount Carmel. This simply gave more fuel, more fodder to the critics. ATF agents on that day, the 76 who participated and who walked into a buzzsaw of gunfire, were in fact carrying out their sworn duties. The Branch Davidians were breaking gun laws on a serial basis. More than 300 illegally altered, unregistered automatic weapons were recovered from Mount Carmel even after the fire. These guns, they had been told by informants, former Branch Davidians who had left, disgusted by David Koresh's excesses, they'd been told by these informants that the Branch Davidians were training in the use of these guns, which was true, that there was even discussion by Koresh that the Branch Davidians had to be ready to kill for God as well as die for God. Again, true. And the United States government still was reeling for what had happened in Jonestown when they had plenty of advance warning, didn't do anything, and over 900 people, a U.S. congressman and members of the media, all died in Guyana because of it. So there was valid reason to go in. The way they did it was absolutely foolish. Once they knew the element of surprise was gone, they certainly should have gone to what they had originally planned, surround and call out, just surround them and sit and wait until they decided, okay, we'll come out. Eventually, it would have worked because the water supply inside Mount Carmel would have run out. They didn't do it. They got tremendous criticism. They deserved it, but they learned from it. So did the FBI. We need to ask ourselves. It's been 30 years. Since that time, government agencies have occasionally had to have a siege. We talked about in Texas, it happened in Montana. It doesn't happen often, it happens occasionally, but never again has it ever ended with this kind of tragedy. They learned the lesson of restraint. They learned it at awful cost. Their mistakes are, again, terrible. But to try to link it to some overall broader plot by the government to oppress gun-owning or religious citizens absolutely doesn't work. It is not true.
But looking at it from the viewpoint of people who have that paranoia about the government, they do see it and they reject some of the evidence that this was about incompetence and bad leadership. They see it as, here you go. Waco happened. Ruby Ridge happened. These things
who's
are coming
reminding,
for us.
Who keeps repeating that? There are certain commentators, right?
Bad faith actors, I would say.
Yes. And they're taking advantage of this. They're making themselves rich by trying to keep the propaganda and the paranoia raging. Facts don't matter, right?
So, you know, we had Jade Helm in Texas, conspiracy that Barack Obama was going to send in the black helicopters into Texas and he was going to overthrow the Constitution, and there was some military operation in the state, and this was something. There's evidence that this was a Russian psyop used, and then Governor Greg Abbott activated the National Guard to monitor what was happening. It fed into this idea that the government is was waiting for a moment to seize control and take everyone's guns and become a dictatorship.
Let's ask ourselves, if the government, or at least, shall we say, the Democratic Party when it's in power, was planning to do this, do you think they'd have waited 30 years? These things never happen. That's where we need to stop and say, okay, supposedly Obama was going to send in the black ops and all the... Didn't happen. We keep hearing these liberal presidents are going to take everyone's guns away. Yet these folks keep getting elected and people aren't having their guns snatched. If it was going to happen, don't you think it would have?
How did Koresh and his group know that the ATF was coming?
The Branch Davidians were clued in because a TV cameraman, there had been news leaked to the Waco media that this was going to be happening on Sunday morning. And a local news station sent out a couple camera crews to different angles around the Branch Davidian property to record whatever was going to happen. One of the guys driving along in his car with his camera trying to find the spot he was supposed to be posted in got lost. He was thrilled to see a yellow sedan with U.S. mail on the side of it cruising up the road, figured a mailman would know where Mount Carmel was, stopped the car and asked the guy inside, David Jones, do you know where Mount Carmel is? Because ATF is about to come and try to have some kind of operation and arrest David Koresh. David Jones, the man in the car, was a Branch Davidian who lived at Mount Carmel. And he had been sent out by Koresh to get extra copies of that day's Waco newspaper, which had a number of stories about the Branch Davidians in it. He assured the TV guy, no, you're right where you're supposed to be. You can actually see Mount Carmel over there, and pointed. Then he leaped in his car, raced back to Mount Carmel, and told Koresh what he had just learned. So the Branch Davidians not only knew ATF was coming, but they'd prepared all their different adult members who had trained with these automatic powerful weapons, had their personal guns in their rooms with magazines of ammunition. It took them a matter of moments to be able to stand off whoever was coming. They were ready when the ATF arrived and the bloodbath commenced.
How did the ATF know that the Davidians were aware of their coming raid?
One of the ATF agents, Robert Rodriguez, had actually been working undercover and had been invited by Koresh to come into Mount Carmel on several occasions. Rodriguez was actually in Mount Carmel when the mailman raced in to tell Koresh what was happening. Rodriguez was allowed to leave Mount Carmel, and he immediately told the agent who was in charge, one of the two agents in charge of the operation, called him and said, "They know we're coming. Call it off." But this agent, Chuck Sarabin, made the fatal decision that we can maybe still get it done and sent everybody in anyway. But he'd been alerted that they'd lost the element of surprise. ATF had promised they'd cancel the mission if they did. That didn't happen.
Is it too late to have any kind of truth and reconciliation about what happened at Waco and try to heal this wound?
The problem we have is that the people who want there to have been something more sinister than absolutely horrific human error, and please understand, I'm not trying to minimize the terrible decisions that were made. I'm not trying to forgive them or excuse them. But it was still simple human error. The fact remains that too many people continue clinging to the hope as much as any proof that government is horrible and it's wonderful that I've got my guns and my friends and we're ready to fight. Jack Harwell, who was the sheriff of McLennan County, Waco's part of that, said as he saw this proliferation of militias and blaming what happened at Mount Carmel, that he didn't really think that Waco, Mount Carmel, was the reason these people decided to be militant. It was just an excuse for them to act the way they wanted to act anyway. And I think truer words were never sent. You can't explain something to people who don't care about the facts.
Donald Trump had a rally recently in Waco. It was a kickoff of his 2024 campaign, public campaign for president. Is he trying to trade on that feeling of resentment and paranoia about the government when he made that decision?
You know, too many people who oppose Donald Trump say, "Oh, well, I don't think he's that smart. He just blunders around." Absolutely not. It was a very shrewd thing for him to do. The last thing he wants is for the public, or at least his followers, to have any sympathy for the FBI when he's in his current legal peril. So simply by having his first presidential campaign rally in Waco, he's sending a message to all those people who want to hate the FBI, the deep state that they believe exists. It was a very shrewd thing for him to do to try to keep his core followers happy.
Jeff Gwynn is an investigative reporter and best-selling author. His new book is Waco, David Koresh, The Branch Davidians, and a Legacy of Rage. He will appear this Saturday at the San Antonio Book Festival. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters episodes on our website at tpr.org. And you can like, download, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.